This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, everybody, Trey Wingo here, and the Michael K. Show with Don LaGreca and Peter Rosenberg starts right now. Question, will this be a day without a Don rant?
And a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Tuesday. It is February 23rd, 2021. Michael K., Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg. We're apart, but we're together for the next 4 hours. The other 20 are your responsibility. We start with certainly scary news. I can't say it's somber news at this point because you pray that Tiger Woods is okay. By now, you've probably heard that Tiger Woods was involved in a single car accident in California about 7 a.m. California time. And looks like the car rolled over. He had to be removed from the vehicle by the jaws of life. And his agent has said that Tiger is now in surgery for multiple leg injuries. That's what we know at this point. We don't know if he was going to play golf, if he was coming back from playing golf. Again, it was 7 in the morning when the car was discovered. It was a single car crash. And that is what we're hearing right now. Obviously, more information is going to be made available when he gets out of surgery, how he's doing, the extent of his injuries. But just an awful way to start a show that we always like to say is the start of your candy store portion of your day or your toy store. This is certainly not that, Don.
Well, this is one of the biggest names in sports, and you just hope and pray that he's okay. That's really what it is. I mean, this is not the time to really do anything other than just hope for him to be able to come out of this surgery and just be okay. You know, whether he golfs again, the situation in which the accident had taken place, it just all right now the focus has to be on him getting out of this surgery and him being okay. Because when you hear about the jaws of life, Michael, you know, that's a lot of damage to a car, and that's a lot of damage to a human being that you have to use that. And there's a reason why it's called the jaws of life, because it's the difference between life and death, trying to get somebody out of the car. So these are some pretty serious injuries, and right now all thoughts and prayers have to go to just him, you know, getting out of this surgery and being okay.
Now, the L.A. County Sheriff's Department released this statement on February 23rd, 2021 at approximately 7:12 a.m., LASD responded to a single vehicle rollover traffic collision on the border of Rolling Hills Estates and Rancho Palos Verdes. The vehicle was traveling northbound on Hawthorne Boulevard at Black Horse Road when it crashed. The vehicle sustained major damage. The driver and sole occupant was identified as PGA golfer Eldrick Tiger Woods. Mr. Woods was extricated from the wreck with the jaws of life by Los Angeles County firefighters and paramedics, then transported to a local hospital by ambulance for his injuries. The traffic investigation is being conducted by investigators from the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department Lomita Station. So that's from the police officers, and Mark Steinberg, who has been Tiger's agent forever, is the one who released the fact that Tiger was in surgery for multiple leg injuries. And when you see the car, you can understand how you could have multiple leg injuries. You just hope that they're repairable, but just awful. You know, Peter and I were talking before the show. His life has such a tragic arc to it because, you know, from the time that he was, I think, 4 years old on the Mike Douglas show, and then the story of he and his dad and how he just burst upon the scene and dominated golf for so many years, and then it all took a turn on that Thanksgiving Eve when, you know, his then wife Elin was chasing after the car, and then they found out about the affairs and stuff like that, and then all the back surgeries, and you didn't know if he would come back. Then he just amazingly, triumphantly comes back and wins the Masters, and you think that he's back, but then the back keeps bothering him. He's coming back from back surgery now. There was some doubt on whether or not he'd be able to play in the upcoming Masters this year. And now this, it's amazing. The highs are so high and the lows are so low. And you thought that what happened on that Thanksgiving night was the low of the lows. But then, you know, something like this where your life is in danger, that's really the low of the lows.
Well, and if you look at the big picture for Tiger Woods, You know, Michael, you have to remember the Thanksgiving night debacle. It wasn't necessarily the low of lows. It was the realization that he'd been living such an out of control life for a very long time. And you thought that was the low. And then, of course, really what we saw as the low, physically you have the injury, sure. But I think for Tiger, emotionally, the Tiger Woods, the man, the low was him being, you know, being arrested and those mugshots of him on drugs and in a terrible place. And, you know, Tiger Woods is borderline in Michael Jackson territory of so famous and so talented at so young that there's almost no chance at normalcy. You know, it's we can all talk about the people like this and criticize them and say what we would do. There's no way for a human being of somewhat normal talent and ability to understand what Tiger's life has been like since, like you said, Michael, since he was a 2-year-old.
Yep.
And then when you watch the HBO documentary, which has its flaws but also has its strengths, you realize that, you know, Tiger's dad, he literally started planning for Tiger Woods to become Gandhi. He thought that his son could heal the world through golf. That's the sort of pressure that was heaped onto Tiger as a teenager. I'm not making excuses for everything that's ever happened in Tiger's life. We all own our decisions. But Tiger has had an incredible circumstance to live in. He's absolutely made his share of mistakes. We know that for a long time he wasn't the most pleasant person necessarily on the tour. But guys, what I've been taken with by Tiger over the last several years was not even winning the Masters. It's the way he engages with the other players and media that he's around. It seems like he really has found a more peaceful place. Like, as a huge Tiger fan, I don't even get that upset about finding out he's missing tournaments, because I don't sense that he's that upset. This is all bonus time. He didn't think he'd win another Masters. He didn't think he'd be around and able to occasionally compete at that level. So I feel like he's been a more appreciative, happy guy. And then you see this, the pictures that you see of that car, and you just think, man, kind of feel like this guy can't catch a break these days.
If you look at the arc of Kobe's career, and you read Jeff
Pullman, a lot of similarities.
He was reviled by players, especially his own teammates. But then as he grew and got older, and then especially in his post-playing career, he was beloved. And I think Tiger is really embraced by the other golfers now. In the past, they didn't like him. He wasn't great to the fans, but he certainly seen the light and realized how much he's beloved. And, you know, we don't want this to sound like a post-mortem. We're hoping that he's fine, that he golfs many, many more years, and that he's able to enjoy his children growing up and things like that. But it just, wow. It's a real slap in the face for everybody that, you know, life is so... I mean, if we've learned anything since March 12th of last year, we realize how precious life is.
Well, this is life, you know, and as larger than life a person like Tiger Woods can be, and the sheer perfection of the way that he goes about his business as far as a golfer does not mean that you're not going to have curveballs in life, right? And I think the reason we're all shocked by these things is because he seemed perfect. He seemed impervious to having any negativity happen to him. You know, we always joked about it with Jeter. Like, what has Jeter gone? What a perfect life. You know, great baseball player, very little heartache in his life. You know, he's a father now. He's got kids. He owns a baseball. Like, what a great life. You know, but that's not the way it goes for everybody. And some of it's not your fault. You know, like, he's kind of had the life of your typical athlete, right? Tremendous amount of fame, tremendous amount of money, tremendous amount of responsibility to be able to keep up appearances. And then what happened on Thanksgiving? What happened on Thanksgiving, Peter, happens in marriages. It just doesn't happen to Tiger Woods, where the paparazzi's all over it and it splashed all over the headlines. He had a bad marriage. Things got out of hand. You know, that happens to athletes. His struggles with painkillers, trying to get back on the field. Hey, that's your average football player. Mm-hmm. You know, and now... this accident, you know, we all think salacious, right? Like, oh, must be. No, maybe it's just the fact that he was tired, tried to swerve away from hitting a deer, and then went down an embankment. You know, that happens to people. That happens in life. But it's not supposed to happen to somebody like Tiger, who just seemed like he was this statuesque athlete that was going to just roll through life with never having any adversity. And now he's had his share for sure. And we'll find out exactly, you know, what's next, and hopefully there is a next after this.
Now, Rick Riley, the former Sports Illustrated writer, just tweeted out, Tiger's car, single car accident, not far from the coastline. He said, we drive this road occasionally, not especially dangerous. So you do wonder what could have happened that would allow him to swerve or whatever. Again, we can't sit here and speculate. We don't know, and a lot of people will speculate. We will not do that. But, you know, what caused him to get a single car accident? As Don said, something had to jump out in front of him or something in the road, or who knows? Who knows? But I'm sure it will be parsed and found out. And now, you know, as we speak, according to his agent, who requests privacy moving forward, that Tiger is, in fact, in surgery to repair multiple leg injuries. And that's what we know. So this information just came about 20 minutes before we went on the air. Mm. And we feel that, you know, Tiger Woods, as Peter said, is at the level of a Muhammad Ali in terms of worldwide fame. So a guy like this is in a hospital right now undergoing surgery. It's certainly what you have to address.
Well, this will put it in perspective. Peter will get a kick out of this just from the sheer power of Tiger Woods. I had a bunch of errands to run. I got in the car. I had satellite radio on because all the other stuff was in commercial. Our station was in commercial. I pop on the NHL radio network, and they were talking about it. Like it broke into the coverage of, like, on an NHL channel. This is as big a name as there is in sports, period. So when something like this happens, this becomes a major story.
That's what's leading to, I think, a lot of flashbacks for people of Kobe, because they're two of ten, you know, maybe, in the world that exist on that level. So it's just so strange to be dealing with, and God willing, this is not that situation.
Yeah, but that's the good news, right?
But it gives people the flashback right away. You hear Kobe, you hear Tiger accident. There are so few people in that category. We're talking about the A1 international sports icon that every single human knows. Your grandmother knows. And it's rarefied air.
Keith Olbermann just tweeted out that LAPD Public Information Officer Henry Narvaez, quoted by CNN, as saying that Tiger Woods' multiple leg injuries range from, quote, moderate to critical. Moderate to critical.
But what does that mean, Michael, if they're
one of the legs could be moderately injured, the other one could be critically injured. Right? Multiple leg injuries.
I don't know if the
leg has been broken in many places. I have no idea.
Anything can happen in surgery. But this is not, it doesn't sound like it's life-threatening if it's, you know, it's concentrating on his legs. Now, nobody wants to, you know, be crippled by something like this. But we're not, you know, it's not information, Peter, that, you know, it's touch and go for his life.
Well, I would think at this point, God forbid that was the case, the reports would be Tiger Woods fighting for his life.
Right.
That would be, so this to me sounds like, but that doesn't mean, unfortunately, that he's not fighting for his legs.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's a terrifying
absolutely possibility.
Because
I'm with Michael. It sounds like one leg is, you know, maybe broken, and the other leg, you know, could be damaged beyond repair. I mean, right now, but from a life and death standpoint, nobody wants to ever, you know, be in a wheelchair and not be able to walk. But it doesn't sound like right now we're talking about him fighting for his life, which is good news. And then we'll go to the next stage of
exactly
how severe these injuries are.
Yeah, I mean, we talked a lot before we went on the air exactly, you know, how do you cover this other than as a breaking news story? You know, you could sit here and wonder, will he be able to play again? But I almost think that that's insulting to, you know, Tiger Woods on an operating table right now. We don't know. We don't know the extent of his injuries. His agent said they're significant. You know, the LAPD just said, you know, from moderate to critical. You know, his playing career is secondary right now. His life is first. Whether or not, you know, he'll be able to live a normal life. This guy has had 5 back surgeries.
Yeah.
And there was talk about maybe another one. That's why when he was on with Jim Nantz on Sunday during the golf tournament, you know, he could not pin down Tiger about whether or not he'd play in the Masters, but it didn't seem like it was going to happen because, you know, Tiger said, I only have one back. There's only so much I could do. And if you think about a golfer and the torque that they put on their back, and this guy's had 5 back surgeries, you know, his availability to play every couple of weeks didn't seem very good anyway. And now, you know, even if these injuries are treatable, you know, there is a comeback from it. There's a rehab from it. This is not something that he's going to walk out of the hospital in a couple of days and be fine. So you just cross your fingers and hope that he's okay.
The one thing about his greatness as a golfer is the things he's been able to overcome. So maybe this can be like a Ben Hogan story, too. So I wouldn't put anything past him. We got to wait and see and find out where it is. But you're absolutely right. To speculate when he's going to play again, it's almost like the Panarin story yesterday. When's he going to come back and play for the Rangers? That's secondary. It's about getting your life in order, getting things straightened out. So right now it's just about Tiger Woods, the man, not the golfer. And I'm sure his family and I'm sure himself is probably thinking more, let's assess what's going on here before you start to think about when he's going to be able to play again and if he's going to be able to play again.
I mean, just this weekend, I guess it was sort of a pro-ammy sort of tournament. I'll make that word up. I saw him take a selfie with David Spade. Who was the other?
Dwayne Wade.
Dwayne Wade and David Spade. I think he took selfies with everybody whose last name rhymed. Right. He looked so happy in the picture that I saw with David Spade, the comedian. So, again, you hope that he's okay. You really do. 1-800-919-3776. We'll let you have your thoughts on this. We got other stuff that we'll talk about. First day of fans in New York sporting events, New York City. I have not been able to find out. I wonder if you guys have. The Garden has 2,000, which is 10% of capacity, which is the rule. I mean, it's actually a little bit over. And Barclays Center has 300 people. And nobody's given me an answer why they have 300 people. That's not 10%. Barclays Center is about 16,000 capacity, 17,000.
From what I can understand is that's the max. Because, like, the Islanders, Lou Lamoriello said yesterday, they're going to assess. They're not going to have any fans right away. So I guess it's really up to the venue on how they want to organize it, how they want to do it. And I guess the capacity is 10%. Of the building, but I don't think these teams are under any obligation to honor that or, you know, go up to the limit of. So for whatever reason, maybe the Nets just feel they want to be on the more conservative side. Looks like MSG's trying to be more aggressive, but like the Islanders, Lou says he plans on doing it, but their next home game, I think, is tomorrow, and there is no plan. There will be nobody in the building for that game.
So the rule is you can have up to 10%, but it's according to the comfortability and the adaptability of the specific building. Because it looks like right off the bat, the Knicks and the Rangers are going with the full 10%.
Right. Now, maybe it's just a case of, you know, I don't know. I don't know what, because Lou kind of talked in circles when I heard it. Like, he didn't give a reason why. They said that we're just going to assess and work on it. Maybe it's just, you know, bringing all the personnel back, making sure that you have the right amount of people. Making sure that you have the right, that things are vetted rightly. How are you going to organize looking at the information? Have they been tested in 72 hours? So maybe there's just some teams that aren't, I don't want to say buttoned up because nobody's more buttoned up than Lamoriello and the Islanders, but maybe it's just, I don't know if it's want to or not ready for, but sounds like the Nets and the Islanders are kind of erring more on the side of caution than the Knicks and Rangers.
Our executives spoke to the Nets today, and he tells me they're using the games this week to test things. Then they'll go on the road, then have the All-Star game break. Then they will begin to increase attendance gradually to get to 10%. I don't know how they settle on the number of 300, but that's exactly it. It's about working out the kinks at Barclays Center, and I guess the Garden was more prepared for when this would happen. And that's what they're deciding to do is go the full 10% tonight against Golden State.
And that might be the case only because, the procedure that I had to go through, like getting tested on site, I know some places, I think the Nets may be doing this, will actually give tests.
Yes, they are.
So that obviously means having to hire more people. So maybe it's just a case of because the infrastructure was already in place with the Knicks and Rangers because they were allowing the media and the broadcasts to be there, that they just seemed ready for the influx of 2,000 people, where the other teams still want to just make sure that they got everything done correctly. I guess what I heard with the Nets, which is cool, I guess you'll order from your seat. You're not even going to get up to go to the vendor. You'll be able to get the food delivered to you. So there's not a lot of interaction outside of where you're sitting.
All right, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Jeff in Astoria. Jeff, start it off.
Hey, guys, what's going on?
How are you doing?
I hope everything's good. What do you got? I'm good. I'm actually a huge Tiger fan, and I'm also a caddy, and I've had back surgery, and I just want everybody to realize, like, let's take this from positivity. I know it's hard to, but Ben Hogan, and Don brought it up, of all people, to mention him, which I was surprised about. But Ben Hogan was hit in El Paso, Texas in 1949 head-on by a bus. mm-hmm. and he came back. So this has happened before. So if I have to pull as a fan, I have to look at, and everything I've seen with Tiger, if there's somebody that can come back and it's on the legit, it's Tiger.
Well, if there's a way, he'll find it.
Yeah, and I think that Ben Hogan crash, I think his wife was really critically injured. And then, you know, they didn't even know about the viability of him going forward, and he ended up golfing again and golfing at a very high level. Again, we don't want to compare the injuries. You have no idea. But
well,
Ben
I think
Hogan,
the most important thing
head
is,
on.
And also, to me, it's honestly, on this day today, and I don't blame golf fans for caring about it, it feels almost crass to talk about the future of his golf career.
Yeah.
Like, we can have that conversation tomorrow once we know he's all right and out of surgery and, you know, and God willing keeps his legs. Like, these are, that's where we're at still. So, I mean, should somehow he be okay? Listen, you'd be at this point, I think even Don would agree. Saying Tiger Woods can't ever, if he has the ability to still pick up a club,
right.
saying he can't do anything is ill-advised.
No, exactly.
I mean, he ended up winning a Masters after four back surgeries, so that's not easy.
Listen, if it can be done, he'll do it. But I also think it comes from a place of, you know, people trying to be optimistic here. And you know, looks
True.
He's okay. But
True.
Now let's see if he'll be able to golf. Because that's how we know him, right? We know him as a golfer. We don't know him personally. So you can understand people kind of anxious to kind of anticipate whether he's going to play again, because that's how they know Tiger.
No, guys, one of the reasons I have fallen in love with Tiger really in the second half of his career, sort of after the Thanksgiving incident, is because I realized how much I was attached to him from my youth. So when you turn on golf on a weekend and you see Tiger walking on the fairway, it makes you feel good. You know, it's something that's reassuring. And one of the amazing things about golf is that, in theory, Tiger could continue to play that role in our lives for many years still.
Yeah, it's so weird. I always talk about this, and everybody who listens and watches, you're part of the whole process and the family, which we love so much. And you know, you could be thinking at noon about what you're going to do on a show, and then everything just changes because this supersedes, I mean, Sam Darnold or Wilson, who's more, well,
no.
That's not your lead anymore. You know, Garrett Cole said analytics is used against baseball players to control salaries. Yeah, we'll address it, but that's no longer the open. Things change quickly in life, and in this case, it affects the toy store with Tiger Woods. If you just joined us, in a one-car accident in California about 7 o'clock this morning, had to be removed from the car by the jaws of life, and is now in surgery to repair multiple leg injuries. So that's the deal. That is the deal. This portion of the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by London, the engagement shop by London Jewelers. Picker designed the perfect engagement ring to fit every budget. Visit 2 by London at the Americana Manhasset, East Hampton, and Westfield World Trade Center. We'll come back. We'll talk about all those things that we just hit on, and we'll continue to monitor the Tiger situation. When he gets out of surgery, we'll tell you. We have everybody at the highest levels of ESPN information gathering working with us, so this is the place to stay. We'll get you up to date as things do transpire, and we'll hit on all the other topics that are important as well in the sports world. It's Michael K., Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg, and you right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so first full day of workouts for the Yankees and the Mets, all players. And now Aaron Boone said that Domingo Germán did speak with the pitchers and the catchers and then spoke with the position players. They had to do it twice because of COVID stipulations. They can't all be in the same room at the same time. And Boone thinks that the acceptance will come after what Germán had done and after the suspension. We'll get to the Garrett Cole situation a little bit later on. Garrett Cole mentioned how analytics is being used to hold down player salaries. And it's significant that Garrett Cole says that because he's one of the leaders in the Players Association. But Aaron Judge spoke with the media today. Now, of note, he said that he and the Yankees have not engaged in any conversations about an extension. And I guess I understand the Yankees' thinking here because they've got to see if Aaron could stay healthy. That's the most important thing. But that's not even the story, guys. If you, I feel like a teacher in class. If you go to your workbook or if you go to your social media and you call up one of the Aaron Judge interviews.
What's up, All Rise?
Yeah. You will notice that Aaron Judge has shockingly gotten rid of the gap between his two front teeth.
Well,
now, I kind of, you know, blew it up. It'll be different the way you watch Yankee games, but that is shocking to me because, Don, you know, Michael Strahan never did it.
No.
Because Michael Strahan knew that that gap made him different, made him distinctive. You know, if he got it fixed, he'd be just like everybody else. But Aaron Judge going against the grain and fixing the gap in his teeth, which is what he was kind of known for looks-wise. So we'll see how it affects him, but it will affect the way you watch the Yankees.
No.
Not good enough for you?
Not at all.
Really?
That is as big a letdown as you've ever – you've disappointed me more than you've ever had.
It's actually – you've gotten to a point now where, right, like, your words mean nothing.
Like, really? I thought, are they going to put names on the back of the jerseys?
Come on, of course they won't.
Are they going to have, like, a big Nike swoosh right under the logo? Like, selling ads all over the place?
But doesn't Michael's response there, Don, tell you everything you need to know? You said, are they going to put the names on the back of the jerseys? And he indignantly yelled, no, no, they won't.
Because if that's their thing.
But if that's the standard, that they would never even consider names on a jersey, how exciting are they capable of being?
How exciting is who capable of being?
The Yankees. They're not going to do anything.
What do you mean they're not going to do anything? They put a great team on the field every single year.
The thing that makes
the Yankees distinctive is because they don't have uniforms on the back. They don't have names on the back of the uniforms.
I like it. I think it's a cool thing. But to this point, like, I'm looking at the picture now. He looks better.
Oh, you think
I think it was the right
Strahan
move.
Look better?
I don't know. Michael Strahan never really got it corrected, so I don't know. But
even if he did look better, he knows that the thing that makes him different makes him distinctive. I mean, this could knock your balance off.
I don't think Aaron Judge needs anything else to be distinctive. He's 8 feet tall.
I think he did the right thing. Honestly, of all the things that made him different,
right?
Like to Peter's point, he's a monster.
Most baseball
players that are that big aren't great like he is. He's got number 99, which is a very rare uniform. Like, he's very recognizable. I never go, oh, Aaron Judge, he's the one with the gap in his teeth. Like, it never occurred to me. I might not even notice looking at the picture that right away what's different about him.
Because you're not locked in.
I will tell you, though.
I'm not locked in. No, I am not locked in to the little differences in everybody's face. I could be up in the last seat of the upper deck of Yankee Stadium and know it's Aaron Judge that's up. Don't see his face. I see his number. I see that he's a foot taller than everybody else on the team. That's distinctive to me.
By the way, you know this is much more than closing the gap, right?
What do you mean? Talk to us.
These are veneers. He redid the whole front. Everything's different. It's beautiful. By the way, I'm not knocking it. It's beautiful.
No, it was a great move by him.
He is a much better looking man today than he was yesterday or whatever it was. It's a great decision. I have zero problem with it. But just
look
to be
at
clear,
you.
No, he did more than just fill in the gap. These are new teeth, and they look great.
Wow, you Good never say anything nice about people.
Yeah, I'm looking now at the comparison, the pictures next to him. Yeah, he swapped them all out. Good for him.
Wow. It's the right move.
Well, let's listen to what he had to say. He admitted today it hurts not to win the World Series, but they have to start fresh. Here's Aaron Judge.
Every year I put my heart and soul into this game, you know, into my teammates, you know, into this city, into this organization. So that's why every year it hurts, you know, when we lose. And, you know, I feel like I let the city down. I feel like I let my teammates down. And those cuts are deep, you know, but those are just scars. You know, I got scars all over me of, you know, past losses and past experience. But all it's doing is, you know, making us stronger. So I just try to, you know, build off those experiences, what worked, what didn't work. And it's all going to make it sweeter in the end. You know, it's a journey. You know, it's this process of, you know, going through the ups and downs. That's a journey. That's what I love to do. And, you know, it's what's going to make the ultimate prize, you know, bringing a championship back so much sweeter.
There you go. Now, I also did some work about something that we spoke late in the show yesterday about Don and Peter possibly doing a spring training game. And we'll have more on that in the next couple of days, but I have done some work on it. Yeah. I've reached up to the highest levels of management. I will just leave it at that. So it's worth sticking with us. Next couple of days, we'll find out more about the viability of this situation.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if they make a decision,
right,
in the negative for this, which they may, then they're out of touch with their audience, because overwhelmingly, people are in favor of us at least doing an inning of a spring training game. I get the first one; you don't want to do that. It's an introduction to the team. I get it, but just some random Saturday or Sunday game, Peter and I doing a couple of innings, overwhelming. The audience would want to crave it.
And wait, Don, are we believing that Michael actually is going to have a conversation about this?
No, I think he did. I have had an initial conversation with a decision maker.
How bad did it go?
We'll reveal as we move along throughout the week.
I'm one of the greatest broadcasters on planet Earth.
Or was this just you? Oh, you wouldn't believe what these clowns want to do. But I want to throw it out
actually,
to you.
It was actually brought up to me because people do watch the show and listen to the show. I didn't even bring it up, but I have been contacted, and we'll just leave it at that.
All right, so this is coming up over the next couple of days.
Yeah.
So that's a major tease.
It was actually going to be done today, where, you know, some things might have been buttoned up, but I just didn't think the tenor of today's show, because of the Tiger situation, would lend itself to having that much fun.
Now,
this can't be. See, is this going to be another lie? Is this going to be
it's
like...
It's not a lie.
Because I'll tell you, man, people were really into the idea, so...
Here's the only thing I'll accept, Peter. Hmm. I will not accept him saying he spoke to, you know, Agent X, and it's a no-go. I want to hear the no from the executive on the air. I want it told to me directly. If that's not the case, then it didn't happen.
That, and I understand why, Don, you'd say that. It makes sense. Because a lot of people felt, and it's interesting, Michael's tone sounds different today. Yesterday, it sounded like he didn't even want us to get the opportunity. Like it wouldn't be fun for him.
Well, it would devalue him. Never mind not being fun for him. His brand would be devalued.
I still believe that that could be the case. Here is Gerrit Cole.
Okay.
One of the leaders of the Yankees, and one of the leaders in the Players Association. So he's one of the decision makers when it comes to, you know, the Yankees have two of them, Britton and Gerrit Cole. They actually had three last year because James Paxton is also high up in the pecking order of the union, but now he's back with Seattle. And he said some things I thought that were very, very telling, because the firing of the guy, or the resignation of the CEO of the Mariners, has reinvigorated the Players Association, where what he said is proof positive that there's manipulation of players' time in the big leagues. And I understand why that would upset the players. I just wanted to throw this at you before we hear what Cole said. So the service time, the players are upset that service time is manipulated. Okay, I understand it, because, you know, rather than be a free agent after 6 years, if they manipulate it, it'll be 7 years. Like if they bring you up a month into the season.
Right.
That means they keep you an extra year, and you also get arbitration a year later than you would have. But I'd have to ask you this. What they are doing, is it illegal? I would almost think that if they didn't do it, it would be a transgression to cost your team money. I think that the problem is that loophole exists, that they agreed to that loophole in the CBA. But as long as there's a loophole, I mean, if you remember, when the Wilpons owned the team, we thought that Van Wagenen made a mistake in 2019 calling up Alonso at the beginning of the year.
Right.
Now, he ended up having 53 home runs, so it worked out great. And the Wilpons sold 95% of the team. But if the Wilpons remained in charge and he continued on that arc, Pete Alonso, well, you might have ended up losing him because you didn't keep him down in the minors until April 25th. And it also comes back and bites owners sometimes. Remember, Chris Bryant's service time was manipulated by the Cubs. And he went to arbitration. They said they didn't do anything illegal. But here's the deal. If they had not manipulated the service time, Don, they don't want Chris Bryant on their team anymore. He makes $18 million, not the player that he once was. He would have been a free agent at the end of this year, and they would have been free of the $18 million that he got.
So it could work against you as well as for you.
That's right.
So there's a gamble on both sides. Doesn't seem like a gamble, but not every player turns out to be a star. Some players peter out right away. There's a puff of smoke early, and then they just fade. Yeah, so then it becomes strategic. But again, like I say with the football players, if you don't like it, negotiate it out of the contract. Finding loopholes, that's what good businessmen do, right? And then what happens is the next time you got to negotiate a contract, you got away with it the first time, not anymore. So I guess now's the time to complain about it if you're Cole, because their contract's up at the end of the year. So I'm sure that's going to be something they're going to try to negotiate out. But be careful, because in the case of Chris Bryant, Bryant's probably happy they did that.
Now, here is Cole talking about how analytics are used to hold down player salaries. So listen to this. It's important as we enter a year where the CBA is going to be over everybody's head.
I think in the end, what we're looking for is a balance. Like, I certainly don't want to restrict somebody's knowledge or trying to find some sort of an edge with numbers. Those people have a place in the game. Like Zach, Grabs, Fish. I mean, these guys are invested as any player. I mean, this is just specifically speaking about our organization. And I would assume that other organizations that I've been to, so a lot of the league kind of operates with, they're good people there. Now, you know, how that information is played out, you know, if you're trying to win, or you want to have like an open field for Cubs to compete, like in all different areas, compete in analytics, compete over players, et cetera. Now, when the analytics are used to suppress salary or to manipulate service time or for things other than trying to put the best product on the field, you know, that's concerning. But like, I don't know if I'm in a position to be able to say, like, you can only use analytics so much. Like, you know, you can use it as much as probably you want, certainly under the rules. I would just like to see it applied so that it doesn't hinder the product or it doesn't hurt the product. And sometimes we just have to learn from our mistakes in that regard.
See, I would respectfully disagree with Garrett Cole. Analytics help players too. I mean, his agent is Scott Boras, who uses analytics much to his advantage in negotiating contracts. And what the GMs of today's baseball do is that they use analytics to find a better way to win at a lesser price. I don't know if it's holding down salary. Now, service time manipulation to me is not analytics. Analytics is, we're going to pay guys that hit home runs, strike out, and walk more than we're going to pay guys that, you know, hit 280 and slap singles around. I don't think that they're artificially holding down salaries, because the guys that hit home runs, they're making a great deal of money. I think that his use of the word analytics is not quite accurate in this sense, because it's not analytics. It's just a different way to evaluate players. And I don't think they're holding down salaries. Well, I think they're just paying guys that do the things they want them to do more, and the guys that don't do the things that they find valuable less.
Well, I guess it does hold down salaries when you could see the Tampa Bay Rays put together a World Series team on a shoestring budget.
Because they're smarter than everybody else.
Well, but that's his point, is that it
but
can
you can't,
be done.
You can't legislate teams, against smarts.
But what smarts do is devaluate contracts, because now you don't have to have a $250 million payroll to compete. And so, remember, the whole reason Billy Beane instituted it was because the A's didn't have any money. So they had to find value that wasn't going to cost them a lot of money. So they found guys that careers looked like they were over but had great on-base percentages, and they were able to build through that. And now it's expanded even further, that where you can be a team like the Marlins, like the Rays, that if you're really smart, you can put together a $75 million payroll and compete for a World Series. That's going to bring down salaries. I don't know what you do about it, because you're right, it's smart, but what the smartness is doing is, I don't have to have a $200 million payroll to compete.
Yeah, but
and now all the other teams are going to have the envies. Look what the Yankees are. Don't you think the Yankees are influenced by the fact that they got beat by a team that had a payroll a quarter less than theirs was? So now they're thinking, why should I go over the luxury tax? Why should I spend like a drunken sailor when we got beat by a team that had no money?
Yeah, but I don't think, again, you can't negotiate smartness away. So I don't think they're artificial. There's only one team. There's two teams that do it well with a low payroll: the A's and the Rays. The Dodgers have the highest payroll in baseball. They're defending world champions. The Yankees have the second or third highest payroll in baseball. Teams are still going to spend.
Right.
Analytics have nothing to do with it. They're just figuring out a better way to skin a cat.
Now,
that's exactly what they're doing.
Now, this is going back a long time ago, where I, if you remember the last hour of the Michael Kay Show, Max Kellerman would come on. Do you remember that?
No, I don't.
Well, because you weren't there, because you have baseball. So, and again, entrusting me to a show by myself for an hour would be like giving the keys to Marco or Jalen, your car. So they brought in Max. And when he'd show up, we'd actually do the hour together. And
oh, wow.
We got into this huge fight. He thought Mike Cameron was better than Alfonso Soriano. And I'm like, you're nuts. He started spitting out all of these like analytics. And this is the infancy of analytics.
Right, he's
where he was able
analytic.
To find some stats that made Cameron a better player than Soriano, even though your eyes told you that he was a much better player. But he would break out. He had more home runs in tie games. He had more home runs in the seventh inning on. So what the analytics do is, and especially in the age of arbitration, Michael, is that you can find some stat that can either pump up the value of a player or bring it way down. Yeah, he hits 50 home runs a year. Yeah, he bats 300. Yeah, he's won 17 consecutive gold gloves. But look at his on-base percentage. Look at his home runs after the seventh inning. Look at how many home runs he hit when the game was 10-0 as opposed to tied at 1. You can dig stuff up, Michael, and if you get a sucker to believe it, well, then that could hurt you. So I understand where he's coming from. I don't know how you legislate it out, but I can – he just sounds like somebody that's venting. Somebody, by the way, that I think analytics has helped get him the contract that he's gotten.
Well, analytics helped him with spin rate and things like
right.
that, which became a $324 million contract. So be careful what you wish for, because
if you have
the analytics go away, then a lot of people would make as much money.
But here's the thing, Michael. How is analytics going away?
It's not.
It's not. But I think it's okay. It's cool for him to complain about it.
He's complaining about the analytics. Are home runs are more valuable than singles hitters. Analytics is not about service time manipulation. That's just pure business that they signed a CBA that had that loophole, and the owners are smart enough to have found the loophole. So close the loophole. That's not analytics. Now, he does say you can learn from analytics mistakes as well. Here's Garrett.
I would hope if you pulled a pitcher too early in a pivotal game in the World Series that the next time if you had the opportunity to get there, you would maybe make a different decision. But the only way you're going to learn that that's the wrong decision is by making a wrong call, I guess. So we all got to learn and we all got to get better. I just don't want to see that kind of stuff used to make the product worse or to manipulate overhead. Yeah, that's just stupid.
Yeah, but I don't think they're not using the analytics to make the product worse. They think the analytics work. So if you're going to take a shot at the Tampa Bay Rays for taking out Blake Snell, sorry, you got to take a shot at the Yankees for taking out Davey Garcia after one inning.
But I think that's what he's saying is, I get like it's all about winning, but what did we complain about when Snell was taken out of that game? We got robbed of seeing a great pitching performance. It does affect the game. Now, ultimately, if the Rays had won the game, the Rays fans wouldn't necessarily care. It helped them win a championship, and they're upset that it didn't. But to Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg, and Michael Kay, we sat down there anticipating, hoping we'd see this amazing pitching performance that the Rays would be able to survive in the World Series, and we got robbed of that. We get robbed of seeing players play 162 games and get 700 at-bats because the analytics tell us they shouldn't play every day. They should take a dozen games off during the course of the year. Does that help the sport? Does that help market the sport when a Sunday night baseball game may not have Aaron Judge in it? So it does affect the enjoyment of the game for sure. Because, it's about wins and losses, but it's also about me enjoying a certain player to play. And if that player is going to miss 20 games because he can't play a day game after a night game, or me getting to watch a brilliant pitching performance where a guy might have a chance at a no-hitter and he's pulled after six innings because, oh my God, he's going to have to face the same batter a third time, that takes the enjoyment away from the game.
Yeah, again, you're going to have to show the people that are real smart with the slide rules in the front office that you can win going with your gut rather than going. Because I'm telling you, Kevin Cash would make the same decision today that he made in the World Series, even knowing the way it turned out. And I believe, just talking to Aaron Boone over the winter, he'd make the same decision taking out Davey Garcia. These people are locked into this stuff.
Well, but maybe that's what Garrett Cole's ultimately hoping for with this conversation, is to try to tell his team, the play, hey, step up, say something. Well, so you're just a pawn? Sorry, you're pitching the game of your life. in the World Series. You dreamed about this your entire life, but you're going to have to face the same batter a third time. We're pulling you out. If the players kind of come together in this era now of players having power, well, maybe the players could say, let's do something about that. Let's say to our manager, don't take me out of this game. I want to stay in this game. I don't want to be used as some kind of analytic pawn for the ultimate championship when I'm dealing and I've got to hand the ball because I can't pitch a seventh inning because I'm going to have to face the same guy that I've already struck out twice a third time.
All right, we are going to break. We have Jeff Passan on, who had a serious collision yesterday with a bird, a small bird or a big fly. We're not quite sure. And Jeff will tell us the fallout from the Seattle Mariners CEO resigning and what that's going to mean for the future CBA. The Michael Kay Show on 98.7 ESPN, brought to you by GEICO. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing GEICO's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Also announced, a press conference is planned for 6 p.m. Eastern time to update the public on Tiger Woods' condition. Okay. All right, so that'll be at 6 o'clock Eastern time, and that's from Jason Martinez of Fox 29.
Wow.
In Philly, who's also an L.A. native. So we'll know more at about 6 o'clock right during ENN.
Perfect.
Jeff Passan joins us in just a moment, so stick around. Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the Michael Kay Show.
I get concerned about friends, people I care about. And when I saw yesterday a very, very small bird dive bomb into the head of Jeff Passan, I said, we got to have Jeff on just to check to see if it's okay. Jeff, the first question is, how are you? Because that looks serious.
Yeah, Andrew reached out to me yesterday to come on the show. And I have to be honest, I was just nursing my injuries. I was laying down with a hot compress on my head, just making sure that I was going to be okay after that. It was a harrowing moment, Michael. It took everything in my power to stave off that really scary moment when the fly landed on my head.
You're a hero, Jeff.
Watching that and your ability to plow through, I believe you could be a diamond cutter.
The Michael Kay Show.
Good story, Don. Thanks.
I don't have to ask any questions. I'm good.
On 98.7 ESPN.
Peter, have you ever seen a guy get more upset or his feelings hurt than Don, even more than me?
I wouldn't have responded well to that. I thought he took it in stride.
Thank you.
Gregory Joseph just tweeted, didn't even flinch when that caller expressed his attraction for him. This is a man with confidence. And he took a screenshot where Don almost seems pleased that the caller, Tim, said he wanted to make out with him.
I got to find it. I haven't seen this yet.
How are you not complimented?
Ed Claremont said that last caller calling for intimacy with Don was troubling, to say the least.
Why is it troubling?
I don't think
he was serious. I think he wanted to flummox me, and it didn't work. I mean, I was not flummoxed at all.
No, I think you embraced it.
I think we should start, you know, maybe in a few, whenever we get back in the studio, in addition to Try It Tuesday or Mikey Likes It, whatever the food thing is going to be, I think we should have a makeout competition as well.
Yeah, let's move on. The day started with obviously distressing news. Tiger Woods, at about 7:12, they're saying California time, West Coast time, his car flipped over, was totally destroyed. He had to be extricated from the car with the jaws of life. The last we heard from his agent, Mark Steinberg, is that he is undergoing surgery for multiple injuries to his legs. At 6 o'clock, we will carry the press conference from in front of the police station in the part of California where Tiger was hurt, and we'll have the latest information. Now, here is our very own Ramona Shelburne talking about the initial reports and what she's hearing out there in L.A. Here's ESPN's Ramona Shelburne.
you know, there's injuries to both of his legs, and the way it's being described to me is pretty serious injuries to those legs. Obviously, you wouldn't be in surgery if it wasn't serious, but it's to have a serious leg injuries. You know, look, Bobby Jones came back from broken legs, okay, but we don't know until we figure out how serious it is, like how much of the leg is hurt. It sounds like it's more ankle legs, you know, the lower parts, right? But as opposed to your hips. One person I talked to said they don't think it's life-threatening. They think it's doesn't sound like a head injury or anything. But again, very preliminary stuff right now. I'm on my way to the hospital now. He's still, you know, obviously in surgery, and we'll know more afterwards.
Now, according to the Daily Mail, a paper from United Kingdom, they're reporting that it's a shattered ankle and a compound fracture. Mm. And from what I know, a compound fracture is when the bone goes through the skin. So just, certainly scary.
But in the grand scheme of when you first heard this come down, you know, this is, I would think this is good news. It doesn't seem like it's life-threatening. And listen, his legs may be compromised, but I think it's better than what we thought when we first heard about the accident. When you hear the jaws of life, Michael, you're not thinking this is somebody that might be able to survive. So
I'll say this. It feels momentum-wise, Don, and obviously this is fingers crossed, it feels like it's going the right direction.
Now, obviously this has affected the sporting community in a big way. There are very few people in sports history that have been referred to by just one name, and everybody knows exactly who you're talking about. I mean, this is on the Elvis level.
Yeah, Ali,
I don't think that's
Pele.
Hyperbole. This Tiger Woods could walk in Malaysia and people would know who he was. Mm-hmm. He's just a famous human being. So this has affected a lot of people. Here is a fellow PGA Tour golfer Justin Thomas on Tiger's accident.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sick to my stomach. You know, it hurts to see one of your, I mean, now my closest friends, get in an accident. And, man, I just hope he's all right. Just worry for his kids, you know. I'm sure they're struggling.
You could hear his voice trembling just a bit. Curtis Strange, a legendary golfer, spoke about Tiger Woods.
You know, he's a human being, and we don't want to see this happen to anybody, much less somebody that, you know, such a hero to so many young players, and not only golfers, but athletes out there. Let's not forget that he wasn't just a golfer. He crossed all lines of athleticism and just humans. And he was such an inspiration to so many people. So it's not just the golf world right now. It's the public in general. I don't have any idea how tough coming back from the back surgery was, because I've never been through anything like that. Minor surgeries, yes, but this was something major. And I must say, I don't know if anybody else has ever been through anything like that and come back and gotten to the top of their sport. It's almost inhuman what he did.
The highs and the lows of his life at this point, I will not use was, like Curtis just did, but the highs and the lows are startling. They're startling high highs, and the lows are startlingly low. And you would figure that what happened on that Thanksgiving night was one of the lows. But now this happens, and, you know, this guy has been on the top of the mountain for so long. He got into the public spotlight when he was 2 or 3 years old as a little kid that appeared on, and now our younger listeners might not know who this is, the Mike Douglas show. It's kind of like you look at Ellen DeGeneres' show in the afternoon. That's right. What Mike Douglas was. Mike Douglas once had, for a whole week, John Lennon and Yoko Ono as his co-hosts. That's how big Mike Douglas was. So right. He appeared on the Mike Douglas show. I think he was 2, 3, or 4. And he's been in the spotlight since then and handled it for a long time very, very well. But then there were demons that were uncovered and the Thanksgiving incident with the wife with the golf club. But then he climbed back to the top of the mountain, as Curtis Strange said, coming back at that point from 4 back surgeries to win the Masters. Mm. I mean, it just gripped the sporting world. And, had another back surgery, was recuperating from that, and then what happened this morning. So you cross your fingers and hope, just as a human being, that he's okay, that he can, you know, be there for his kids.
If he can't come back and play, then it wasn't humanly possible.
Yeah.
That's what you would have to say, because everything, both inflicted, self-inflicted, that has happened to him in his life, he's been able to come back. And really, the only thing that he's really losing to is father time.
You know, so, but if we don't see him on the golf course again, then I don't think any other human being could have done it. So
now listen,
we'll see what happens.
We often talk, obviously, Tiger's a fixture on this show because of my fascination with him and Don's lack of interest in golf and the conversation about how obsessed the sports media is with him. But Curtis Strange said something that resonated with me. When you talk about players who in their specific sport affected the game and the amount of players who then would join that game, is there anyone close to Tiger and Jordan for how much they made young people pick up that game? I would say Tiger's number one all
time. Yeah, more so than Jordan.
More than Jordan. Tiger, to me, is – you guys tell me who's second. In the history of sports, directly influenced the money in the game, not just from TV rights, to the sale of golf balls. He turned the entire sport on its axis.
It's probably difficult to compare because of the era, but it's Jackie Robinson-esque, right? I mean, think of all the African-American kids who said, you know, I could play baseball because Jackie made it. It's at that level, right?
It is.
Because, again, we can't equate it to going back to the 1940s and what it meant in the grand scheme of things with no social media, no 24/7 news coverage. But I would have to think that there were African-American kids in the 40s who wouldn't pick up a bat and ball that all of a sudden did because they felt like they can be Jackie Robinson.
But here's the amazing thing, and I don't know this about Jackie Robinson, but based on what I know about America, I'm guessing what I'm going to say is true. Tiger's influence was not only huge on people of color. Tiger Woods was so big, and a part of that because of his race, and also, of course, mostly because of his brilliance, that people like me and tons of the people in the car right now in my age range are only interested in the sport to this day because of Tiger Woods. I don't know that Jackie Robinson made white kids go pick up a baseball bat, but Tiger Woods made white people go pick up a golf club.
Listen, the people that we kind of poke fun of, or I poke fun of on this show, right, the Trey Wingos, the Mike Greenbergs, who just fawn over Tiger.
The Peter Rosenberg.
That created my rant. Mm-hmm. They fawn over Tiger as an homage to thank you for making my favorite sport relevant. Because that's what he did. He took a game that people casually watched, and when the majors were on, they paid attention, that might have golfed on the weekends and kind of cared a little bit, to where it became a major passion for them personally. It became much-watched television for them. And for 20 years, their favorite sport became relevant. And that's the homage, because there's very few people that can do that, where you can break it down to one person. Because if Tiger never played golf, where would this sport be? It'd be only mentioned on the majors, if that, right? The television coverage wouldn't be nearly what it is. The ratings wouldn't be nearly what they are. So he took a sport that was a, let's face it, a fringe sport and put it into the mainstream. And that's why guys like those love Tiger, because that's a thank you for making my sport relevant. Thank you for caring. I wish you cared about the sport the way I do. That's the moment that they're saying.
And, you know, Justin Thomas was so emotional. You know, he started loving golf because of Tiger Woods, talking to what Peter just said. You know, as a seven-year-old, he's watching Tiger Woods,
right.
And now, you know, it's one of his contemporaries. So let's just hope for the best, and first thing, hope that he's fine and he can live a normal life. Second thing, that he could get back on the golf course. But just, an awful, awful story to hear today. And
Michael, one more question related to that. You mentioned the arc of Tiger's life and the highs, the high highs and low lows. When I think about the biggest international sports superstars of my lifetime, so many of them had huge highs and super low lows. Tiger, Jordan, Kobe, Tyson. You know, LeBron has not had any. But for the most part, I mean, it's not uncommon that people who fly, you know, that close to the sun seem to occasionally sort of get burned.
Yeah, let's hope for the best, mm-hmm. Really. The other big story today, I wrote it down because I want – do you know it's been 352 days since there has been a sporting event in New York City with fans able to attend? I believe the last one was the first half of the St. John's game in the Big East tournament, which was ill-advised to play.
Right.
And then they pulled them off the court, and they never got back on the court. I think it was against Creighton. That's it. That's the last time. There were no fans at Yankee games, no fans at Met games, nothing at Giant and Jet games. That's Jersey. But in New York City tonight, it all changes. 2,000 fans at Madison Square Garden to see the Knicks against Golden State. 300 fans at Barclays Center to see the Nets against the Kings. It is, in a word, monumental. I mean, we've been waiting for the world to return to somewhat of a semblance of normalcy. Somewhat. And here we are, the first baby step. This is not a cannonball into the pool. This is putting your toe in, and they're going to take it slowly. That's why there are 300 people at Barclays Center, because they're going to see. They're going to wait. They're going to try. They're going to see what works, what doesn't work. The Garden, they feel more ready. They're going with 2,000 people for the Knicks game. Then there's a Ranger game coming up. The same deal. It's going to be about 2,000. And then April 1st, it's the Yankees on their home opener. We'll see if it's 10% there. Maybe it's improved to 20. But this is significant, people. This means we're getting closer to the life that we once knew. We're still far away, but you have to be honest, everybody. We weren't able to see it in the distance even 3 months ago. We couldn't imagine what it looked like. And now, tonight, when we turn on MSG or we turn on Yes, we're going to get a semblance of what it could be and how it can improve in a month or 2 months or 3 months. And by September, to me, that's exciting. And I'm thrilled for tonight. I'm thrilled for the people that have an opportunity to go, and I'm thrilled to be able to watch it. And I'm thrilled for the players to be playing in front of people and enjoy their craft and be adored by the people that they play for.
If we don't have any setbacks, Michael, it's a first big step towards what we hope is going to be some normalcy. You know, and that's what you pray, that we don't have another outbreak or this new variant is going to be a problem. But we're starting to see tangible evidence that we're getting on the other side of this thing. And from a sports perspective, this is a major play. Coming back and playing in our own arenas outside of bubbles was one thing. And now fans there in New York, because I don't know this for a fact, but New York felt like the epicenter of this whole thing, right? Like, maybe because we live in New York. I mean, there might have been other places that were harder hit. But, boy, in March and April, it felt like it was all coming apart here in New York. Where the rest of the country wasn't taking it seriously, we were having people dying in the Javits Center. You know, there was a ship that came in the Hudson that was brought here to bring COVID patients in. I mean, that was the level of what it was here. And to think that less than a year later there could be fans, even though it's a minimal amount. I just looked it up, Michael. The last Knicks game with fans was March 8th against the Pistons. The last Ranger game with fans was March 7th, the day before, against the Devils. So we're talking almost a calendar year. Now, it's not a full building, but it's a step in that direction. And the hope is that a month from now it'll be 20%. And then as we get deeper into the spring, it'll be 35% or 40%, to where maybe by the end of baseball season and the start of football season, we're talking 75-100%. That's what I'm hoping for.
Oh, that would be awesome. That would just be awesome. Let's go to the phones. Ezzy in Rockland. Ezzy.
Hey, how are you, Michael, Don, Peter? You guys are the greatest. Keep it up.
Thanks. Thank you.
I happen to be a medic out of Rockland, and just want to give a little perspective of the fact that people are talking so much about this and saying stupid things, saying smart things. The good thing is he's alive. At the end of the day, I see so many people in smaller accidents, bigger accidents. I've had many people die in my hands. The fact that he's alive is huge, and we should be grateful for that. That's number one.
That's the most important thing. Yeah.
That's the most important thing, absolutely. And people don't know that. People, they don't see it. They don't know it, but the fact that he's alive is just, from looking at his wreckage, it's huge, the fact that he's alive. Obviously he was trapped in the car from the fact that they used the jaws of life. It's not that significant that they used the jaws of life. Anytime someone gets trapped in the car and has to get extricated, usually we go right away to the jaws of life. It just hydraulics. I'm a small guy. I could basically pull apart the car with my bare hands. Not really with the jaws of life, actually. So it's significant, meaning that he was trapped in. From the fact that he was trapped in, usually it crushes the person. It would crush the person in the front door, in the front seat, wherever the what's called he was, wherever the accident was. So I'm guessing that he was trapped in
in his thingy. That's why his feet were the ones that got crushed, being that his it got crushed from the side, I'm guessing, and it used the jaws of life. That means they have to pry the car open.
The thing is that the jaws of life is such a dramatic name for the tool that, I mean, they cut open the door. That's exactly it, to, you know, it's to take somebody out. But it does add a level of doom to it, the jaws of life. I mean, essentially, you could say they have a machine that cuts open the side of the door and takes the guy out. So, you know, as his best point was, you know, they pulled him out of there. He's alive. He has leg injuries. And that's, and we'll find out more at 6 o'clock when they have the update. And, you know, you cross your fingers and hope he's okay. Yeah. That's all. Let's go to Jimmy in Michigan. Jimmy.
Hey, Michael. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to see something. I heard it earlier. I really hope Tiger as well. I'm a sports fan. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's like a not to the people that preceded him, like Jack Nicklaus, Arnold Palmer, Sam Snead, and all the great legends that started before him. You know, the game was a sport prior to Tiger. Just like it would be unfair to Jordan and, you know, Magic and all the other legends that preceded LeBron.
But, Jimmy, you would have to say, you would have to say that Tiger opened the game, I'm not just saying color, opened the game to inner city kids that never thought that game was for them. So, no, I Jack Nicklaus didn't. Lee Trevino didn't. Arnold Palmer didn't. Arnold Palmer brought in different people. I agree. But in terms of Tiger made people think, we can do that. So, no, I disagree with that strongly.
What I said was, thank you for making my sport relevant, is not to say that it was irrelevant before, but clearly there was a seismic change where it was a sport that we paid attention to during the majors. It'd be talked about when there's special moments in 86 when Nicklaus won the Masters. But it's kind of like what basketball was before Magic and Bird. Right? People played basketball then, Michael, and people were basketball fans. But you know what? NBA Finals were on tape delay. Right? Not all the games were on television because the sport wasn't as popular. Then it turned a corner. And it turned a corner in a major way. So whether he doubled it, tripled it, quadrupled it, whatever it is, not being disrespectful to Ben Hogan and Jack Nicklaus and all those great golfers, but I'm sorry. Tiger Woods put it on the mainstream where you could open up a talk show talking about golf. That it was the Golf Channel, I looked it up, started in 1995. You don't think that channel gained traction having Tiger Woods to talk about?
I don't think the channel still exists.
You know, I'm not sure it does. Or if it does, it's at the level of like the Tennis Channel, which I'm not trying to disrespect any channels. It's just it's not part of the conversation the way it is when Tiger was involved. So it's more of a compliment to him. And I know people played golf, and it was a popular sport, but it was not in the mainstream. And Tiger took it to the mainstream.
I mean, I could borderline, and I don't want to offend the people who get upset when I mention this, I could borderline go wrestling and Hulk Hogan. The difference between something being it's there and it has its fan base to it's part of mainstream culture, it's part of the cultural zeitgeist. I would say Tiger, and I've said this before, Tiger had more influence on his game than anyone else on any game ever. Maybe Babe Ruth is the other one you talk about.
Right. Kavitha Davidson used to work at ESPN, now at The Athletic. She tweeted out that the L.A. fire captain clarifies that the jaws of life were not needed to extract Tiger from the car. Hand tools were used. So, you know, different information, especially at the beginning. Everybody wants to be first. Bottom line is hand tools were used to get him out. He got out. That's the most important thing. He got out. He was alive. He's got leg injuries. He's surgically getting them repaired. And we'll know at 6 o'clock further news. Fair?
Fair.
All right. 1-800-919-3776. We continue to follow this right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy. Hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Split the eyes apart. and break the frozen.
Ice picks. Ice picks. Ice picks. Ice picks.
After going 1-for-2 yesterday, I'm going to go back on the horse with Ice Picks, brought to you by BetMGM Sports. I think it's bounce back time for Les Canadiens. They lost Saturday to Toronto, then they lost in overtime Sunday to the Ottawa Senators in Ottawa. They're playing the Senators again in Ottawa again, and I think Montreal bounces back. They cover the goal and a half at plus 115. I like Montreal tonight for my Ice Picks, and that is Ice Picks brought to you by BetMGM Sports. Place your parlays, props, and future bets at the King of Sportsbooks. Get the app today.
Did you guys see the story yesterday that's becoming a little bit more prevalent today that the Mavericks, Dallas Mavericks, are shopping Kristaps Porzingis? So, you know, Porzingis and his brother made it out to be like it was a Nick problem. And then everything was Shangri-La when they go to Dallas. And now Dallas looks like they want to get rid of him because I guess he and Luka don't really gel together. But maybe it's a Kristaps problem or a Kristaps and his brother problem and not a Nick or Maverick problem. Now, it's the trade possible that the Knicks made, not the best deal in the world. They made it because they said they wouldn't have been able to sign him long term. And they wanted to clear cap space for two people, so that would get them Durant and Irving. Neither happened. But they did get first-round draft picks. Now, the Mavericks for a while looked like they were going to be a lottery team. I don't think they will be. So it's probably going to be a mid-round first-rounder, which isn't terrible. They also got Dennis Smith Jr., who's been dreadful, and he ended up getting traded already for Derrick Rose. But it is interesting that, you know, Porzingis now is being shopped by the Mavericks. So, again, it's probably a Porzingis problem and not a team problem.
Yeah, I thought the same thing when I saw that article. It's interesting. Bouncing to another team.
Yeah, shocking, because with his talent, you know, his size and the three-point shooting ability, but he's also a little fragile. You know, I never blame somebody for that, but obviously that is an issue. Michael Conforto of the Mets spoke with the media today. Now, although it's out there about Porzingis, Cuban spoke today and said there's nothing to the trade rumors. Mark Cuban, the owner of the Mavericks, but boy, it's all over. So you got to believe Cuban at his word, but somebody somewhere thinks he's being shopped. Let's leave it at that.
Yeah.
Conforto was asked if he has talked extension with the Mets because he's a free agent at the end of this year. Here's Michael Conforto.
No, we haven't started that conversation. I think for now it's great for me to just be able to come in and get my feet wet. And like I said, meet the guys, see everybody again. A lot of my best friends are out here. So it's just good to see them. It's good to be back out on a baseball field and run around and work on our craft. And for now, that stuff hasn't started yet.
So do you want to stay with the Mets, though?
I mean, I would imagine I'll personally be involved with a lot of it. You know, I'd like to be. I don't know how these things go, you know. You know, I guess I could ask Jake. I could ask some guys that have been through this process. But to be completely honest, I've been so focused on preparing myself for this season. You know, I can't lie and say that I haven't thought about it. But I'm trying to keep my focus where it needs to be, and that's on this team.
Well, he obviously didn't answer what I thought he was going to answer, whether or not he wants to stay with the Mets. But I will tell you this. His agent is Scott Boras. And I'd say at 98% of the people that Scott Boras has represented, when they're a year away from free agency, they don't sign. Unless you completely bowl them over. Strasburg did, and that's a Boras client. You've got to bowl them over. And although I think Michael Conforto's an outstanding player, Don, I'm not sure he's the type of player that you're going to bowl over.
No, you're not. And if you were somebody that isn't looking for top dollar, and this is no offense to Michael Conforto at all, Scott Boras is not your agent. I mean, Scott Boras is not the agent that is going to get you an average deal. You know, he doesn't want to give up his leverage. Somebody that is going to sign before he becomes a free agent is forfeiting his leverage. And that's not, then you might as well just get some other agent to do that for you. But if you've got Scott Boras as your agent, you're trying to get top dollar in free agency. So the move is the ball's in his court, right? Go out there, have a monster season, and then you can get that big-time money. But if I'm the Mets, I want to see that. I want to see that happen before I'm starting giving him a contract extension that's going to be something that I'm not comfortable with.
The other right fielder in New York on the other side of town, Aaron Judge said, now he's going to be a free agent in 2 years, not this year. He said that they have not talked at all about an extension, and I'm assuming the Yankees just want to see him stay on the field.
See,
although, if you want to get a bargain, you would think that if you signed him now, you could get a bargain. But if he goes on the field and plays 155 games this year and hits 58 home runs, then all of a sudden your price is a lot higher than it would be if you signed him now.
But you know, if I'm the Yankees and I've got money, I root for that. Because if I get 150 games and 50 home runs and 135 RBIs from him, I'll give him a contract. I'd be happy to do it. I think they'd love to give him a deal, Michael, based on what his talent is. But he's got to prove that he can play every day. So that's why I'm not giving him a contract.
So Ian O'Connor, the great Ian O'Connor, listening to the show, and we were talking about Arnold Palmer and Tiger Woods. So he just texted me this, said, 1 year Arnold Palmer was a finalist for the Hickok belt. That's the belt that they give out for athlete of the year. And Roger Maris said to him, what the bleep are you doing here at the event? Because he was a golfer, not a real athlete. Maris never would have said that to Tiger Woods. Palmer ended up winning the belt that night and intentionally walked by Maris with it. So, you know, you could say that Palmer did things and obviously gained interest in golf for different economic levels of people. You know, he came from Latrobe, Pennsylvania. Tiger, I think, just had a completely different feel. He had much more of an impact growing the game of golf because, hey, the bottom line is golf, their ratings had never been higher than when Tiger Woods played. Right. And when he doesn't play, the ratings for that tournament are way down. And it's something that Don and I talk about where the sport's really not popular. Tiger's popular.
I think I want to give credit because I thought it was a great tweet. But for the sake of moving along, I'll just give you the feel. He made golf cool. Golf was something your dad did. Golf was something older people did. You didn't necessarily have to be fit. Kind of like bowling, right? You don't get that sense that bowlers are athletes or dart players are athletes. Like golf fell into that. And now here comes Tiger. He's buff. He's young. He's a person of color, all the things that most golfers are not, and then he owns it. So I'm not saying that people take things up solely because it's cool, but Peter, I think there were some people who were like, I'd like to play that sport, but that doesn't look cool to me. My friends aren't playing that. People that look like me don't play that sport. And now when Tiger starts playing it and dominating it, then it became like a really cool thing to do. And the next thing you know, 21-year-olds are going out there and they're saving up for golf clubs and they're joining clubs and they're going with their dad on a weekend to play golf.
And it's
that
funny
they never saw before.
And it's funny because Tiger Woods, the guy, the human being, has never come off as what you would describe as cool. But Tiger Woods,
kind of geeky.
He is. He's uncomfortable, and they talk about that in the documentary quite a bit. Obviously, he wasn't comfortable. He was a trained, you know, prodigy. It's no different than if he'd been sitting around doing math equations his entire childhood, right? But at the same time, he's so cool on the golf course. Like, the way he started dressing was cooler. His hats, his red on Sunday, everything about him added a level of cool to the game that didn't exist. Now, someone mentioned earlier on our conversation about influence, and I thought it was totally reasonable, and I thought about it as we were discussing it, the Williams sisters. And I do agree, they have a huge influence, and you're seeing it now. We talked about it last week with how Naomi Osaka beat Serena Williams by basically wanting to be Serena Williams. And you see it with Coco Gauff, who's 16 years old, and you are now seeing the influence that they've had on the game. Tiger Woods' dominance goes back a teeny bit further, where he's at the point where it feels like every major player on the PGA Tour basically modeled their workout regimen. I mean, guys, let's be honest. What did most golfers' bodies look like before Tiger Woods? Most guys don't look like John Daly or Phil Mickelson anymore. Most of the star players look a lot more like Tiger Woods. They're in good shape. We talk about Brooks Koepka. You know, all these guys, they have their style, their approach to the game is different because of Tiger.
Let's take a brief time out. We're going to have a live update from California at 6 o'clock, right at the start of ENN, so stick around for that. Your phone call's next. Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.